Today, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, Joseph California, officially released the latest Surgeon General's report on smoking and health. There are reports that this document is more rehashed than research. While there does not appear to be much that's new, according to the Chief of HEW Smoking and Health Office, the report does clearly overlook some important considerations. For example, only 3 out of the 1,200 pages deal with efforts to make cigarette smoking even more safer. But I suppose that's to be expected from Secretary Califano. In summary, my initial conclusion that this is another sad chapter in Califano's efforts to destroy our tobacco industry. It's unfortunate that he cannot be a secretary for all of our people and begin to focus attention on drug abuse, alcoholism, and some of the other more serious problems that afflict this nation also.
I'm under the Department of Commerce. I've been in communication with Dr. Cripps, the Secretary of Commerce, who's from North Carolina. I believe that I've impressed upon her the necessity of such a station to the mountainous region of the state, which has the most severe weather North Carolina experiences. My office is following this situation closely and will take any necessary action that we can to keep the station open and operating. It hasn't been publicly announced, but there's been a concerted attempt by some members of the administration to assess tobacco, cotton, and other farmers to pay for the cost of their tobacco farm or their federal farm programs. Now, this was just one step that was advocated as the White House sought ways to cut the budget for next fiscal year. It would have placed an additional burden on North Carolina's tobacco and cotton farmers, and I opposed it when I learned of it. This morning, I received a call from the Office of Management and Budget saying that the proposal has been rejected. So our North Carolina farmers and those in other states have escaped a financial burden that might or might not have won congressional approval. A bill which I co-sponsored with Senator Hollins of South Carolina would allow American textile firms to compete under free trade conditions and make 340,000 North Carolinians safer in their jobs. The bill would remove textiles and apparel from the list of items to be negotiated in international trade and stop any increase of cheap textile imports into this country. All of our textile workers want, all that they want is equity, but they can hardly compete with foreign plants which are subsidized by their governments and which pay workers 55 cents an hour. This removes textiles and apparel from any free trade market. If the bill which we've introduced can be made law, our textile plants in North Carolina can view the future with confidence and their employees can be more secure in their jobs. I'm glad to announce that the President has honored his commitment to fund tobacco research, and he has requested $910,000 for the Oxford Research Station. Now, there are two things that can be said about the budget for Oxford. First of all, the research monies are being allocated for health-related research, and this, of course, is recognition for what has already taken place. Second, Oxford has done much better than other research stations for whatever that's worth. These figures indicate only the President's request. We should remember that the Congress has the power to appropriate funds, and we'll still be working with the Congress.
Approach to take. As it's now handled, this lunch program is very expensive because of high administrative cost, both to the federal government and to the local schools. We are, in effect, spending money on bureaucratic overhead when we could be spending it on hot lunches for the children. The present system gives lunches to some students, greatly reduced prices for others, and slightly reduced prices to the rest. In effect, we have created 3 classes of students in our schools, and it's impossible to keep it a secret as to who's getting that. Being singled out for special treatment in this way can be very embarrassing for a child. We were all children once, and most of us have children, so we should know what it's like for a child to be treated as a special case because of economic circumstances which are totally beyond the child's control. Many school children from lower-income families simply don't benefit from the program at all because they or their parents consider it demeaning. Yet others who are not really qualified get in on the program. Some parents send in false information and set an example of petty fraud before their children's eyes. Meanwhile, teachers and school employees are put in the position of being policemen and social workers, which ought not to be their function. In some schools, a program is administered by someone specially hired for the purpose. In others, it's done by teachers who must take time away from their teaching duties every day. The program as it exists is discriminatory, and it's a red tape headache for the schools. When I introduced my bill to do away with the red tape and provide lunches to all, the response from educators in North Carolina was overwhelming. The American School Food Service Association has given it unequivocal support. The problem with the present system is so serious that two North Carolina counties, Hoke and Edgecombe, have gone ahead with universal programs without state or federal support. Their experiences have shown that a school lunch program for all students costs no more than the old ones. I believe that we could have the same result on a nationwide basis if we can do away with existing bureaucratic requirements. I believe that my program would be cost-effective for several reasons. It's true that the money I believe my approach would be cost-effective for a number of reasons. It's true the money we'd have to spend at the federal level would be increased, but the time and money the local schools now have to spend on the lunch programs would be saved, and we could buy the food at greatly reduced prices. We require the children to be in school all day. We buy them books, and we buy them bats and balls. We also buy them lunch one way or another, through our federal and local taxes or out of the parents' pockets. In the long run, we could do this more cheaply through a universal school lunch program. In the near future, I'll introduce additional legislation to set up pilot programs across the country to see if I'm right. I believe we'll find that we can benefit our children more at the best price for the taxpayer. The absence of proper food for the children interferes with their physical health and makes it more difficult for them to stay alert and learn. We owe it to their futures to tend to their needs, and we owe it to ourselves to do it right. This has been Speaking of Washington, and I'm Robert Morgan.
In the Senate that would require young men to register with their local Selective Service Board when they reach 18 years of age. This is not a resumption of the draft. However, it would give the nation an inventory of its available manpower in the event of a national crisis or emergency. The Defense Department says that in a crisis situation that it would need 100,000 men within 60 days. Studies have shown that unless there is such a registration, it would take more than 60 days just to get conscription started. There's a very real need for such an inventory, and I'm hopeful that this year a majority in the Congress will agree. 77. The President's budget has been submitted to Congress, and one item caught my eye on a first reading. It's obvious that Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare Joseph Califano plans to step up his fight against the tobacco industry with his anti-smoking campaign. In the HEW budget, there's a request for $13.5 million for the Office of Smoking and Health, a 500% increase over the present $2.5 million for that office. Most of this increase, it's obvious, would go to increase the staff to wage the anti-tobacco fight. With a budget the administration calls lean and austere, it seems to me hard to justify this giant 500% increase in what is at best a questionable cause. In the continuing tobacco controversy, HEW Secretary Califano has asked that his budget to fight smoking in the tobacco industry be increased by 540%. At the same time, the General Accounting Office has come out with a report that says that there's no way that the HEW can prove that it's done any good with the money that it's already spent in this area.
Speaking of Califano's campaign, the GAO says that after an analysis, the increase had been made without an apparent indication of how the funds will be used or the gains are to be achieved. In view of this report, which I've now seen and studied, I'm asking the GAO for an opinion and comment on the request for additional funds to fight the tobacco grower and the tobacco industry. My feeling is that the GAO will find the increase unjustified. Today, I've asked the federal government to investigate and hold hearings on the electricity rates that Virginia Electric and Power Company is charging its customers in North Carolina. I made this request after the North Carolina Public Utilities Commission found that BEPCO rates are far in excess of the rates other utility companies are charging for electricity in our state. There seemed to be evidence that questionable management policies by the Virginia company is in large part responsible for the fact that power users in eastern North Carolina are being penalized. Should the federal hearings establish that fact, then I would ask them to roll the VEPCO rates back so that they would be comparable to the rates other utilities are charging. And has some very serious implications for the United States and for our allies in regard to the oil situation. In the past, we've imported less than 5% of our oil from Iran, but our allies, Japan and Israel, have imported a great deal of their oil. Without a substitute for Iran's oil, Japan and Israel could run into some difficult situations, and we may very well have a situation in this country that would require us to force closing of gas stations on Sundays and maybe at nights. We're not in a crisis situation now, but by working together to conserve as private citizens without government involvement and by developing new energy sources, I think we can see this problem through. But the point is that we have to act now if we're going to prevent some very real trouble in the near future. Our oil from Iran. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but it does make a big difference. Without a substitute for that 5%, gas... This morning, I was informed by the President that he'll appoint Luther Hodges to the position of Undersecretary of Commerce. This means that Mr. Hodges, a former North Carolina banker and now on the faculty of Duke University, will be the number two man at the department. He'll serve there with another North Carolinian, Secretary Juanita Kreps. The President's decision to appoint Luther Hodges to this position is especially pleasing to me, and I'm glad that his talents and his long experience in business and finance are going to be put to work for the federal government. I feel he'll do an outstanding job, and the appointment will be good for the country and helpful to North Carolina. The Taiwan Enabling Act, which has been introduced in the Senate to try to repair some of the harm done when we turned our back on one of our best allies, I regret that it does not go far enough in ensuring Taiwan our whole support. No matter how well-intentioned the act, it recognizes the island of Taiwan is an integral part of communist China, and it recognizes that the Republic of China will become communist in time. What the bill does is to seek postponement of what I think is inevitable. The act says that we are concerned about Taiwan's future, not that we will take steps to protect it. The Senate bill, in fact, tries mildly to correct the injustice done by the action of the State Department, which has labeled Taiwan a non-country in its haste to recognize the communist government of mainland China. I was informed today by the Department of Transportation that North Carolina is being given $23 million for work on its interstate highway system. This is not a regular allocation, but is extra money that the state is being given from the Highway Trust Fund. The money is being sent to our state because our state highway department has worked hard and gotten its projects ready to let to contract, while some other states have not reached that point. The money will be used on projects in five counties, Cumberland, Davidson, Roanne, Randolph, and Catawba. I'm proud of our state for meeting this test
and I'm happy that the diligence of our state highway department is being rewarded. The western part of the country from whom we bought all of our gas had been cutting back drastically in their supplies to us. If this trend had continued, thousands of North Carolinians would have been thrown out of work by the mid-1980s, and many of our homes would have been in danger of being without heat. One solution to the problem would have been to get our suppliers to sell us more gas, but at the time they were not willing to do so. Billions of cubic feet of southwestern gas was being withheld from us and from other states because interstate sales were subject to price controls, while intrastate sales were not subject to such controls. Natural gas producers sold as much high-priced gas as they could in their own states, and that they couldn't sell, they simply left it in the ground. They knew that in the future they would be able to sell it to in-state users at much higher prices. The Natural Gas Compromise Bill, which passed the Senate in the closing days, seeks to relieve this problem by imposing the same regulations on intrastate sales, that is, sales within a state, as on interstate sales, those sales going across state lines. This means that North Carolina, for the first time, will have equal access to Southwest suppliers of natural gas. Also, for the first time, North Carolina will have parity with all other consumers of natural gas. North Carolina factories will not be forced to switch to oil or to coal, which would create and did create air pollution problems. We won't have to expand our nuclear energy plants to compensate for lost natural gas supplies. But what does this do to the gas prices, or what will it do to the gas prices? For North Carolinians and for most of the nation, the hard fact is that natural gas prices are going to go up with or without the bill, and that they have already done so in the past. Despite present regulation and price controls laws, natural gas prices have gone up over 500% during the last 6 years. For many months, I opposed deregulation of natural gas prices because I felt it would give too much of a windfall to the big oil companies, it would have been a heavy blow to consumers, and it would have been highly inflationary. There were many members of the Senate who favored complete deregulation immediately, but I couldn't go that route. I did support, however, the compromise bill, which phases out price controls over a period of years, because I felt it was necessary to do this to get a start toward an entire or total energy program for the country. Like every other important decision that is made in the Congress, the energy program called for compromise, and almost every member of the Senate had to give a little in order to reach this agreement. Now, I don't agree with everything that is in the energy package, and the program is not going to be an overnight cure for our dependence on Arab oil or on the declining value of the dollar overseas. But a first step had to be taken somewhere, and the country couldn't afford to wait another year to get started getting our energy house in order. The results of the natural gas portion of the measure should be felt immediately, especially in states such as North Carolina, where the possibility of running out of gas has been a danger during the last few winters. There'll be a gradual increase in the price during the next few years, but most of the increase will be borne by industrial users, because that is the formula that was written into the bill. People who use gas in their homes will pay less of the higher prices. The compensation for the increase, of course, will be the knowledge that supplies will be adequate, and that no one will lose his job because the pipeline is empty. I think that's a positive accomplishment in the field of energy for the 95th Congress. Now, this has been Speaking of Washington, and I'm Robert Morgan. My gas has been a danger for several years now. There will be a gradual increase in the price during the next few years under this bill, but most of the increase will be borne by industrial users, because that is the formula that was written into the bill. People who use gas in their homes will pay some more, but not as much of the increase as industrial users. The compensation for the increase, of course, will be the knowledge that supplies will be adequate and that no one will lose his job because the pipelines are empty. And so I think we have made some progress on establishing a new energy policy for this country. This has been Speaking of Washington, and I'm Robert Morgan.